done on May 1st, 1972 at the Neighborhood Center in Santa Fe Springs with Gus Velasco. A little bit of background on Gus Velasco is he graduated from Cal State Long Beach with a B.A., Cal State L.A. with a Bachelor of Arts degree in 1965, and he was a teacher at a junior high school here in Los Nietos for approximately 5 years before taking his present position, which is the director of the Neighborhood Center in Santa Fe Springs. To start off the interview, Gus, could you give some of your family background and historical, where you were brought up, and a little bit about your parents?
My parents were born in Mexico, and they're from Guadalajara. And they came here, my dad was about 17, my mom was about 15. They came here about in the late 1920s, I believe. I was born in Los Angeles, next door to Glendale. It was an alley county area. We moved over here when I was a year old, so I lived in Santa Fe Springs for 31 of my 32 years. I'm one of six children. However, my brother passed away when he was about 14 years old, died of leukemia. So I'm an only man, and I have four sisters and myself. I went to the elementary school here in Los Nietos School. Went on to Whittier High School. Graduated from Whittier in 1958. Went on to Whittier College, but because of lack of funds, I transferred to Cal State Los Angeles, graduated at Cal State Los Angeles. Came back to Los Nietos School District and taught there for approximately 5 years.
Could you relate some of the problems you had in elementary school, or were there any?
Yeah. Well, at that time, I didn't realize there were problems. I don't feel that I was confronted with as many problems as others for various reasons. Number one reason was the way I was brought up at home. My parents, although not well educated, had some pretty common sense ideas and were proud of what they were. I think they knew what they were, and they imparted this on me. I was always talking about the fact that I was an American. This was my country. I should love it. But they never let me forget that I was a Mexican. They would tell me the only reason why you're an American is because you were born 100 miles from the border. But I have Mexican blood in me, and I was proud of that too. Grew up loving both countries, as a matter of fact.
Did your parents ever make the transition? Did they ever consider themselves Mexican? American? Yeah. Or did they?
They consider themselves Mexicans, but they love this country because of the opportunities it gave them. But they consider themselves Mexicans. They never turned citizens. And in our home, it was a little Mexico. We were not allowed at home to speak English simply because we always had my grandmother always lived with us, and I always had one or two aunts or a cousin or someone directly from Mexico who didn't speak any English, and it was considered bad manners to speak English in front of those people if they didn't understand. So it was all Spanish. We listened to radio, it was all in Spanish, and TV came on, it was all Channel 34. Of course, by that time I was already in high school, and I remember at the time my sisters and I talking about the fact that we weren't allowed to speak English, and it used to upset us. But now we realize, it was really great for us because, You know, we
with your parents.
Yeah, right. And we spoke a fairly good brand of Spanish. You know, it wasn't the greatest, but grammatically it was correct and not too much slang in it. So, you know, we were ahead in high school in our Spanish classes. We always had good grades. We knew how to read and write it. The thing of, you know, knowing what I am was really important. You know, I was an American of Mexican descent, and I was proud of it.
So, in other words, you never felt racist remarks if somebody would call you a Mexican. In other words, you wouldn't feel inferior. You would be proud if somebody would call you that.
Yeah, I always felt that way. If you know, they did, and I knew it was meant in a derogatory manner, I just brushed it aside, and I thought, well, they're the dumb ones, you know.
Uh-huh.
I never felt inferior. The only time that I really began to feel some inferiority complex, I think, was in high school when I realized I had an accent while speaking English. I never realized I had it. You know, I never heard myself till I taped my voice in Spanish classes, and I found out, and it was sort of a blow. But but again, my parents, you know,
they helped.
Yeah, they helped me over that. I think my sisters felt, especially two of my sisters felt more of a had more problems in school than I did, because for one thing, they were darker than I was, and this really has a lot to do with it, believe it or not. And they felt a little more discrimination. My sister, who was definitely college material, was shuttled into home ed classes. And, her files. One time, I think she glanced at them. She was able to get a glance at them and said, "Not able to handle college prep courses or something like that." You know, from a junior high school teacher. Well, you know, and now we know it isn't so now.
Uh-huh.
But then, yeah.
You mentioned that you went to Whittier High School. What were conditions like if you were branded? What were the conditions like for the Chicano at Whittier High School in the
1950s? We were sort of like a segregated type of a thing. I was able to move back and forth from my friends and into the sports area because I had the ability to play ball. This is another thing that helps us. I noticed that when I came back to teach that if a young kid has a special ability, then he is treated a little differently. And
So in other words, your athletics was your passport to the other side?
Yeah, I would say it was, yes. Yeah. But the fact that I was a good student, you know, I always had pretty good grades. But, you know, in looking back, the guys that were getting good grades and they were doing well in school, way out of proportion. You know, way out of proportion. My circle of friends now has remained the same, really. And there's two or three of them that, you know, are quite intelligent. As a matter of fact, you know, even more intelligent than myself and another friend who have, quotes, you know, made it because we got through college. But, you know, they just got a bum deal. You know, there's no getting around it. They just got a bum deal.
Shuffled them around until they got real discouraged.
Yeah, they ended up being pushouts, you know, really. You know, they just sort of dropped out of school. If they did finish, they didn't pursue it any further. They, you know, their confidence shattered and everything. But there's one man especially, you know, almost a brilliant guy, you know, really intelligent. But, I don't know, he may still do something, I don't know, but he's married, has three children, so it's pretty hard.
Was there particularly that Whittier High School when you were there? Or what was the,
well,
what were
know,
the gangs
you know,
or the clubs called?
Locos, I don't know. You know, we would say lack of locals. Even within our group, you know, in the Chicanara, there was lots of locals, you know.
That's for crazy guys, right?
Yeah, but those are the guys that, you know, were getting busted all the time for drinking. You know, even though we did it, but is for some reason or another, we knew how far to go. And these guys are guys that they really didn't. You know, they didn't know how far to go, and they would get busted. They were, you know, smoking pot all the time and stuff like this. And the guys I hung around with, they smoked pot, but it wasn't, you know, they didn't go overboard on it, you know. And then there was the Chicano Falso that they called. And, you know, I was always in danger of the Chicano Falso bit because I was in sports and because I was able to associate with Arachos, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I never quite, you know, I was never quite labeled that because my circle of friends were always Chicanos, you know. I never completely went overboard. I think it's because I never felt really comfortable in there. But back in my
superficial relationship? More
yeah, it was superficial, yeah. But with my friends, you know, of course it wasn't. I grew up with them, and, you know, and so the fact that I was so entrenched with Mexicanismo, you know, also made it easier. So in a way I was, you know, it was a unique situation for me in looking back because, you know, I would go to the football games, I'd be playing, and they'd wait for me after the game. It was really a happy thing. I never felt that they were trying to pull me down, you know, like some people say, if that Mexicano makes it, other Mexicanos try to pull them down. Well, I never felt that. It was always encouragement for my friends. And when I continued on to college, I mentioned this before, of course there wasn't this nationalism that there is now among the Chicanos.
How did you relate during your college years? Was it coming back to the community? Or, I mean, did you still live in Santa Fe Springs?
Oh, yeah, I commuted, yeah. Even when I was at Whittier. I was at Whittier, I did spend a lot of my time over there at the college. But, again, I was with one of my close friends. You know, he went on and continued, and he finished. But he and I were always together, you know. As a matter of fact, people would always confuse our names. Although we didn't look alike at all. And he was, you know, he just didn't look alike. They'd call me Sam. They'd call him Gus. And, you know, one of those things. But I guess this, you all look alike, but I don't know. It could have been.
What was the attitude of the community when you went to college? Was it a positive one?
Oh, yeah. No, it was a very positive one. Were
they always pushing you, you know, trying to get you through? Encouragement?
Well, it was encouragement, yeah. It was encouragement. And the fact that I was working for Parks and Recreation and had close contact with them was, you know, I could feel it. You know, I could feel that they were proud of the fact that I was going. I was only about, let's see, there was a boy that lived here, his name was Willie Gordon. He was, I guess, about the first boy that went on to college. He's an attorney now from this area. Then my sister was about the first girl. She went on and she finished this is my oldest one now, my oldest sister. She continued, she finished college. And actually, I was about the third one here in the Flood Ranch area. You know, so it was sort of a unique thing. And of course, now we have a lot of kids going to college because of these Expanded Horizons programs. So, you know, last year, I think half of the Chicanitos graduating from Pioneer High, half of them went on to college.
That's real good.
Yeah.
Well, what was it when you found out about?
Oh, yeah. Is, you know,
estimation?
Yeah, maybe not even 1%. You know, was that bad? The dropout rate, I don't think, was as bad as it is in East Los Angeles. It isn't as bad now here. Yeah, it's only about 8% here. Now it's really minimal. In East LA, I understand it's really high.
About 50%.
50% something like that, yeah. It isn't like that here. So that what I was starting to tell you, that when I was going to college, it was more or less, I didn't even think of a Chicano bit. To me, it was just get to school and get out. And of course, I was married and had a child by the time. I had two children and another one on the way when I graduated. You know, so it was...
It was a matter of survival.
Yeah, right. You know, get the guts to school and that was it, you know. But at that time, around 65 was when, the blacks started really... blacks really are the ones that instigated this whole thing, that blew it open. And then the Mexicans were on. But when I first started teaching, my attitude was, if I made it, then, why shouldn't someone else be able to make it? And of course, that was really a crappy attitude. When I started teaching and I realized the type of things that were happening at schools, the attitudes of the teachers, the comments they were making in the classes, like, these parents don't care, why should we bother? With these type of kids, you have to take it easy, you can't expect too much.
Did they specifically water down the curriculum so that they would get by, so to say?
Well, I don't know if they watered down. I think that was just the attitude of the teachers.
Uh-huh.
I know the administration was trying things to make it a little more relevant to the Mexican American. Some of the things they were trying were perhaps not what they should have been doing. I know they emphasized the arts a lot, in the learning process.
Mexicans are good in art.
Yeah, they're good with their hands. But it's a learning process that can be applied to anyone, really, not just to the Mexican American. It can be applied to the Anglo child. It's a good way, but I sort of think they went overboard on it. But they're trying something different, something new. That's all right. Los Muertos does have some good, innovative programs. They get a lot of funds from federal government. And they have, bilingual, bicultural classes. They have Head Start programs. They were one of the first school districts to really get community aides and, parents, mothers to really get and work with the teachers. They do a lot of that. But I think still, again, if the attitudes of the teachers remain the same, then I don't care what kind of curriculum you have, you're not going to make it anyway.
What happened, you were teaching at Los Nidos Junior High when the 68 walkouts in East Los Angeles
mm-hmm.
took place. What was the reaction of the teachers?
Oh, well,
what was it like at Los Nidos?
First of all, the teachers sort of became scared because they thought that it was going to come over this way. And, it was a typical reaction, a typical Anglo reaction. It was all, that's the wrong way, you don't do it that way, But they never really looked at the issue, why did the kids have to walk out? Why did they have to take those measures? It was, it was just like the riots, like the watch riots and the riots in East LA. You look at what happens and you only talk about the fact that it happened, but you never talk about why. Why do these kids feel the need to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was negative. They felt it was all wrong. And, of course, there was three teachers then, another Chicano teacher, and then an Anglo teacher who was pretty empathetic, he had quite a bit of empathy.
Did they ever confront you and ask you what you were going to do to avoid, as Chicano teachers on campus, to avoid something like that?
No,
buffers between students and the administration?
No.
No, they never had that problem?
No. The group got to be known as sort of rabble-rousers, especially the two other ones, because they had a little different personalities than I did, and they really attacked people. I don't really attack them. I converse and I make points, but I don't attack people. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I think it's needed.
It's just another way of doing it.
That's right, because I can't do it. Just the same thing with... teachers would ask me how I stood on these riots and how I stood on militarism, this militant bit. I can't do it, but I think it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I can do to help, you know, I'll help. Or I don't like violence, you know, but I don't think that just because you're a militant there has to be, you have to be violent.
Well,
I think a lot of people equate that, you know, being a militant with violence, and it's not so.
You can have a militant attitude, but yet use the same channels as everybody else.
And maybe use different channels, the more direct channels, but not necessarily violent ones.
Yeah. What made you change your, what brought you up to the decision you are now, from transition from a...
Well, it was a
comp teacher to a administrative head.
It was a combination of things. I could sit here and BS you and tell you that it was all idealism, you know. But it wasn't necessarily, I think it was part of it. Because when I came back into this area to teach, I was sort of criticized because by my fellow teachers, it's pretty dumb to teach in your own area. And although when I came back, I didn't come back with the idea that I'm going to come back here because I'm going to help my people, you know. I just felt that I could do a better job here because I knew people here. I knew the parents, I knew the children. So this is why I came back. Now, you know, now that's the thing to do. You come back to the barrio where you found, well, you know, I just,
you did it maybe I was popular.
Yeah, but as I said, I didn't do it because, I don't know how to say. I didn't do it for the same reason that the kid does it now. You know what I mean? Or maybe it was the same reason I didn't realize it. I don't know. But I didn't come back.
You didn't consciously come back because you were going to do all these wonderful things.
No, I just felt that would be the best place I could. That was the best job. I could do the best job here. So maybe in a way it is. You know, maybe it is the same reason. I don't know. But anyway. I taught for 4 years, and at first, my idea was to be a master teacher, you know, to be the best teacher possible. And I started seeing all these sort of attitudes that these teachers had, and we tried to change them by, you know, making some suggestions to the administration as to what types of things they could do, what types of sensitizing programs they could put in and stuff like this. And nothing really changed, so I said, this isn't the place for me to make. To creating change, I'm going to have to, you know, go back to school and get my administrative credentials. And then at that time too, there was this business of, you know, urban renewal was just, the fight was just finishing, and people were talking about what other types of things could they do to help the area, you know, rather than just fixing it up and so on. And then I heard about this position. Center being built, and I applied. I thought about it quite a bit before I applied. And if I did get the job, what I wanted to be teaching, because I enjoyed teaching. And then the thing about not always being idealistic was that there was no money involved in it too. I was working at 3 jobs in order to support. You know, my family, I was working in recreation part-time, and I was teaching a night class.
Oh.
And so with this job, I would be making the same amount.
You have one job.
Yeah. And it also afforded the opportunity to do some good in your community. In other words, I was still going to be here. I was going to be here in Santa Fe Springs and Fed Ranch. And I was still going to be working with the same families and the same people. And so, And I think that from the outside, sometimes you can insert more pressure or influence on a school than you can as a teacher. You know, because you can get transferred or moved around.
Uh-huh.
So that was one of the reasons why I felt it would be a good move.
Gus, how do you think the neighborhood center has benefited the Toronto community here in Long Beach or Santa Fe Springs?
Well. Besides the community seeing the benefits of direct services, you know, educational programs, we have nutrition and Spanish English classes, history classes, this type of thing, medical services, general, you know, information on immigration, legal services, government employment program. I think that the center has done, you know, quite a bit. I think it's beginning to make some difference, and it's beginning to change some lifestyles of some people. It's beginning to create some changes in the thinking process too. Just during this last election, they had a Meet Your Candidates night, and it was although we weren't directly responsible for it, the center was indirectly responsible because it was a place where they could come here and ask for information and get it, where they knew they could meet, where they knew they would receive any help they needed. And so they had a Meet Your Candidates night, and they had about 200 people here, just for the district here, which is great. They had parents that were never before involved in anything, CPAs or anything, and now they're becoming involved. They're becoming involved in the political process, which is what we want. You know, they're becoming involved in other things, like these ladies that were receiving therapy. They after the therapy, they realized the importance of what they received, and they formed an auxiliary, and now they've got a thrift shop in there to help out the child guidance and to use these monies for families who couldn't afford the treatment. And then because they're an auxiliary and because they're a group, they were invited to teas and this type of thing, you know, during the political thing that was going on. You know, the candidates would call them up and invite them, and building up their confidence all along. And so, you know, these group of ladies are going to be I don't know if it's a vital force, but they're going to be a force in the community. You know, I mean, they're going to be involved, and they're going to be making some decisions.
Quickly, Gus, we're running out of tape. What do you perceive as being the most important goals or objectives of the near future for Santa Fe Springs, your center right here?
Well, I think it's just this idea of giving individuals and their families the confidence to continue, confidence to go on and get a better education, and not level not set their goals too low, because I know that point was really brought to me one time. After I got this job, I thought, well, gee, this is a pretty good job. I sort of have hit it. But then my boss said, well, Gus, where do you think this little job is going to lead you to? And it sort of got me to thinking. I thought I had made it. Okay, thanks a lot, Gus. Okay.
With that last comment, the interview was ended prematurely because Mr. Velasco had a very important meeting to attend that day.
Yeah, and the place they called on your hall. And in the basement, they had, these classes for the slower learners and the slow readers. And naturally, 90% of them were filled with Mexican Americans. And, we saw this, but it wasn't this feeling that there is today. We were a little more afraid to say the things we felt.
Were the kids afraid of the administrators, or were they caught in that diet about being an American and not, having it good in this country?
No, it wasn't that. It was a feeling of, you're discriminating against me because you're Mexican. People didn't really pay attention to it. One thing, and looking back, during those days, I didn't think anything of it. I felt everything was fine because I didn't feel discrimination directly. Or if I did hear a slanderous remark by one of my teammates or something, I overlooked it because, I just thought that he was a dumb one. He was the one that didn't understand. Because this is the way I was brought up at home. I know I did start to feel inferior when I realized that I had.